The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
David Myler, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning.
Not a bad weekend's football.
Well, some of the games are very good and very interesting. I suppose it depends who you support, really, for that.
Well, I support Aston Villa, and it has turned out that if you need to get right at the moment, you need a fixture against Aston Villa. We won't get into that too much because Villa hit the 40 points, and it feels like maybe they've gone on holidays. I do want to talk about Harry Kane, though, right? That was one of the ones that we wanted to talk to you about specifically. Mm-hmm. If you're advising Harry Kane, if you're in his backroom team, if you're his agent, or if you're him, what do you want from the rest of your career?
I think Harry Kane is looking at it. I want to win a trophy and I want to break Alan Shearer's all-time Premier League goal scoring record. I think that's got to be the two main objectives on his head, on his mind, sorry. Does he feel like he's going to win a trophy at Spurs? That's the big thing. Look, there's been obviously that link every now and then about Harry Kane going to Manchester City. I think he wants to be defined by winning things. And I think if you look at a Gareth Bale joining, you know, there will be conversations behind this, you know, when you're sitting down having breakfast or you're having lunch or you're travelling to or from a game or whatever, like, he'll have getting that sense of, you know, like, obviously Gareth Bale winning all the Champions Leagues. He'll be hungry to win something. It's just a case of, does he feel he'll be able to do that with Spurs or not? Because I believe he's 27, now turning 28. He's at the age where he probably has one move in him left. Probably won't go to 30, you know, before so your Man City's would sign him or something. So he's got a lot to think about this summer.
When you say a trophy, you mean the Premier League or the Champions League? Effectively,
oh, yeah.
If it's Harry Kane, yeah. It's like, you know, he's not going to be happy with two League Cups and an FA Cup at the end of his career.
No, definitely. Look, with the caliber of player he is, he definitely wants to be challenging for the Premier League and the Champions League. Of course, under Pochettino, they were kind of, you know, that was that year. They probably could have pushed Leicester a bit closer to win it, and then obviously losing to Liverpool in the Champions League final. So he has been there, but it's just, does he feel that Spurs can get back there, challenging for those big trophies, the FA Cups and League Cups? For a player like him, they want more.
Can they do that with, sorry, Owen, can they do that with Jose Mourinho?
I think recruitment needs to be better. I think they can. Look, it's a tough one when you talk about Mourinho, because it's hard to knock him because of the success he's had over the past with every single club he's been at. He's won trophies. So it's hard to knock him. But, like, just something doesn't fit right at Spurs. Is there two or three players that don't fit the mold? What does he need to change? Will Levy give him the money to, you know, recruit the players that he wants? Obviously, he signed Højbjerg in the summer, who's been, like, a very good signing for them. But, like, you look at it, you've got Kane and Son. When, you know, Son is injured, Kane is kind of carrying, you know, the whole weight. Obviously, Vinicius, I know, scored or whatever, but he's not at that level. It's a massive drop-off. And if you look at when Kane obviously picked up that ankle injury or something about 2 months ago, like, Son more or less struggled. He's trying to carry the whole team. So they need more squad depth, and they need to stop conceding goals.
Do you think Tottenham are a little bit stung by what happened last time they were in the situation where they have this world-class talent who they eventually obviously accepted massive money for in Gareth Bale, and they buy seven players, I think, with that money. Christian Eriksen and maybe Eric Lamella are the two players you could take from that seven who were okay in the end. That probably hammers home to Danny Levy just a little bit, that even if you get £150 million for Harry Kane, it doesn't necessarily ensure that the next phase of Spurs is going to be a successful period.
No, definitely. You could talk about the seven players they signed, and of course the two that will stand out are those two you mentioned, Lamella and Eriksen. You see, Harry Kane has been like Harry Kane and Gareth Bale at those times where, you know, part of the kind of club's DNA, they know the way Spurs works, you know, the way they play, the fans, the whole thing. When you sign players from various different countries, you know, across the world, it does take time for them to sell in. As you said, like, other players at that time were like Paulinho, like, and it didn't really, it's a risky game. Then if you were to go look at, I don't know, if they were to go look at English strikers, you're still going to have to fork up massive amounts of money. That's where they try and, you know, dip into the overseas market to kind of see if we can steal a player for half the price you'd pay for an English player or whatever. So it is very difficult. It is an interesting one because I feel Harry Kane is going to have that conversation. I think he'll have it with Levy and said, if the club doesn't recruit in the right way and bring in the big players to make us challenging on all fronts in every competition, then I think he will ask to leave.
And that poses a really, really tricky situation for him, even just from an image standpoint. He doesn't want to be the guy who is throwing his toys out of the pram here at a club that he professes to love so much.
Yeah, but you've got to be selfish at times. You've got to look after number one. At the end of the day, it is a business. There's no real loyalty or love in football. If you look at any of the big clubs who've had long servants, eventually they will get pushed out. Look, there's no doubt that Harry Kane will be thinking about it. And, you know, I imagine the club would be well aware that if we're not going in the same direction, how can they even, you look at it, if Harry Kane leaves, do you think Heung-Min Son's going to be happy? You know, that's the side of it then. And it can't, like, for someone like Harry Kane, I don't think it can be about money, that if the club were to offer him crazy, crazy money. And we've always seen that with, you know, Tottenham, their wage structure's never been, that was the biggest downfall. The lads even that I know, they always complained about it and said that they try and obviously limit it compared to the other big clubs. But if Harry Kane was to leave or cause a fuss, you could imagine it will spread into the change room and there will be two or three other players who are looking to leave then as well.
Last question for me on Kane. If you're a Spurs fan, really what you want to happen is that England win a tournament, because that way he can at least say, my career is being successful at international level. I'm an all-time club legend with Spurs. And there's some way for that success to be fulfilled elsewhere, I think. Like, the alternative is that they go and they win a tournament. He's like, well, I'm Harry Kane. I want to win the Champions League now as well. So maybe it's a double-edged sword, but I certainly would be cheering England on if I was a Spurs fan.
Well, no, you've said it there. It's a double-edged sword, because if he goes and wins, say, the Euros with England, then he's got a taste of silverware. And you tell me he's going to go happy, like, go back to Spurs and be happy or content for the next four or five seasons not to win anything. Like, once you get your hands on a trophy, you want more. I think that's the big thing. That would be evident. Of course, us across, you know, the Emerald Isle there.
Not so happy.
Yeah, not so happy. But look, it's a tough one. Like, look, I know Harry Kane say Lota. I don't know him that well. He might, for all we know, he might be thinking, do you know what? I'm never leaving Tottenham. I want to be remembered as an all-time great at Tottenham. I could be completely miles off it. He might say, Tottenham is my club. I want to stay at Tottenham for the rest of my career. Like, there's always, that comparison is always drawn to Alan Shearer going back to Newcastle. Big difference was Shearer did have a Premier League title when he went back to Newcastle. So he'd already achieved something. He then chased the dream of winning something with Newcastle, which was more important to him than, you know, obviously signing for Manchester United, where he'd probably end up now having 5-6 Premier League titles. But he chose to go to Newcastle to try him. But he had silverware in his back pocket. That's the big thing for Kane. Does he stay or does he go? It's going to be an interesting, you know, few months to see what does unfold.
Yeah, it certainly is. Can we talk about the FA Cup and Leicester City beating Manchester United 3-1? What happened to Manchester United here, David?
Ooh, I was thinking about that before I sat down this morning. It's kind of like, look, I get it. You know, they've had a very busy schedule, obviously, with the Europa League, both games against Milan, that massive win against Manchester City. Of course, then, you know, the demands and that, and I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer defended his decision to rotate the team. I feel, look, they've got Brighton coming up next before they play Granada in the Europa League. I just felt, I don't know, is it the fan in me or is it the ex-player or whatever? It's the FA Cup quarterfinal. You know, it's a chance to, and don't get me wrong, let me highlight it. The players would have known at halftime that they were playing Southampton in the next round if they won. Everyone would have known. That would have been common knowledge. Somebody would have seen the draw and word would have filtered around the change room. Like, of course, as you make the substitutions at halftime, they're talking about Bruno. Bruno hasn't played at all in the FA Cup. Obviously, yesterday, you know, he hasn't started the game for United. I just felt that, you know, you bring in Telles, who's not played in a while. You bring in Donny van de Beek. Obviously, Pogba played last, came on against Milan where he changed the game, but in the sense that he's not been regularly playing. Massive game, you know, to change a lot of players. I think, he's defended it. I think he got it wrong. I would have played my strongest 11. I would have gone for it.
I guess when you spend that amount of money on someone like Donny van de Beek, you should be able to trust him come the end of the season to be able to fill in for a knackered Bruno Fernandes and maybe do a decent job. What needs to change for him personally or for those working with him at the club to ensure that he can be that guy next season?
I think there's a couple of things with Donny van de Beek. I think he's very unfortunate. Look, he's not played, but then, you know, he looks like he wants to play in that kind of number 10, that creative role. Unfortunately, Bruno has probably been one of the most informed players in the world in the last, you know, 13, 14 months. That he's been very unlucky there. When he has gotten an opportunity, he's only gotten, you know, slight few minutes here in games where they're very comfortable or whatever. He's just not played enough. And I think, like, also if you studied him yesterday, you can just see by, you know, the way he's passing the ball, his confidence is shot. Like, you know, he gets on the half turn, and then it's like, I don't really fancy trying to punch the ball through the lines to say Greenwood or Martial. He ends up taking the safe options because he's trying to feel his way into the game. He's probably second guessing every decision he makes. It's been very difficult, but like a lot of it's down to, you know, the young lad on. He's got to go away and work hard, and he's got to, like, I imagine there'll be a conversation of, look, what's required? What do I need to do? And he needs to up, you know, whether it be his assists, you know, his goals, he needs to add more. And that, you know, that comes from within. He's got to be working harder because it's not work for him so far. And I think, I genuinely believe if, you know, there might be even a conversation this summer, do we move him on? And there'll be a conversation between, you know, Donny van de Beek and his representatives, like, will I stay or will I go? Because he's not played at all. And, you know, for a young man who had an excellent year with Ajax in the Champions League and whatever, you know, to come now and your career stalled for a year, he won't want that to happen again next year.
Ajax put an ad in the paper telling everybody how much they loved Donny van de Beek when he left. Like, it was a weird kind of, they obviously really truly believed in him as a man and as a young person and as like an ambassador for the club, and it's just been a complete flop.
No, it has. It's just not worked out. And look, you wouldn't be surprised if you know, come the summer, if he's loaned back to Ajax or whatever. But there's always that love and affection from Ajax, you know, because the young boys, they sign up at 6 or 7. If you looked at like De Ligt, De Jong, like all those, they come right through from really young age. So there is that, you know, family aspect with Ajax. Of course, look, they're going to be eyeing up the situation, thinking they might feel like they can get him back. You know, I definitely think it probably is just for him as a young man just to cut ties and just say, look, I think it's best I go back. I know, go back to Ajax or something, because they'll take him back in a heartbeat. It's just not worked out. He's just been unlucky. A lot of it has been down to the sensational form of Bruno Fernandes, but I definitely think it is time for him to cut ties.
You were waxing lyrical about Tielemans here on the show last week. Good timing.
Yeah.
It is. No, look, I've always been a keen admirer. I did tweet out yesterday that it was the West Brom game I saw, so I want to correct myself. It was the Sheffield United game. You know what it's like when a goal goes in and you're kind of fluttered and you think of the wrong game. But he has. You know, a lot of people said he blows up after 60 minutes. I was hit with that feedback. I highly doubt it. And then there was a lot of people said, oh, he wouldn't fit at a Liverpool. But this is why you have the managers you have. If Yuri Tielemans went to Liverpool, he's playing under Brendan Rodgers' style, right? You got to think that Jurgen took over from Brendan. A lot of these players would have, you know, who were at Liverpool at the time were used to playing under Brendan's style. Jordan Henderson would be the prime example as a midfielder. Jurgen has taken him on 3-4 levels. I've no doubt that if, you know, Tielemans saying for Liverpool that he would take him on and develop him even more as a player. But I like him. I'm a big fan of him. And like, he's 23, he turns 24. Like, it's in, May. So he's really young. So he's got a lot of good years ahead of him. Whether or not this is true about Gini leaving, it's interesting. But then again, at the same time, how much would Liverpool have to pay for Tielemans? Because I can't see them coughing up 60, 70 million for him.
No, and that's potentially what they might want for him. On the Premier League then, West Ham United against Arsenal, clearly the game of the weekend, David. We just wanted to focus on Declan Rice here, actually. Like, I mean, his partnership with Thomas Souček has been brilliant all season long, and Rice exceptional yesterday.
No, both of them. Like, what a signing Souček has been. I know you mentioned Rice or whatever, but we'll get to him. But Souček has just been incredible, as in, like, his positioning in midfield, he breaks up play. And then, of course, look, he's a threat in both boxes in the sense of defending. He's heading everything away for you. And then in attacking phases, I think he has built up a massive partnership with Declan. Like, you look at Declan for such a young man, I believe he started the last 100 of the last 101 Premier League games, which is just incredible, you know, to show his consistent, like, level of fitness to stay. And he plays a big role. Obviously, he's taken over the armband when Mark Noble's not played, but certainly in his performance. This is a shame that he picked England, because we could do with, you know, a player of his calibre at this moment.
What has he brought to the next level this season? Like, I mean, West Ham, I guess people have put it down to one of those, not Leicester-like under Ranieri, but there is a sense of surprise, or maybe a patronising sense around West Ham this season, that they're not going to be able to back it up next season. But with Declan Rice, he epitomises a genuine improvement, where this isn't a one-off season from Rice. We've seen this potential coming for quite some time. So what has he specifically added to his game this season to actually get to that level where he's in and around a team, in a team that's in and around the Champions League places?
Well, I interviewed Declan about 10 days ago, and Aaron Creswell, sorry. I interviewed the two of them about 10, 11 days ago, and they both highlighted, I said, well, what's different this season? What's changed? And they both highlighted the squad unity. We're more like, you know, more like a family. So that's the big thing. It kind of, you know, it seems to me that they've all pulled together. Whatever David Moyes is doing behind the scenes, all the players have seemed to bought into it, and they're all working together. He said there's no egos. They just go, they work hard every day, and they just, you know, they have a great, great bit of banter between themselves. I think that's the big thing for them. You know, like, if West Ham have always been capable of, like, you know, producing performance and getting a result, but now they've been able to find it on a consistent level. And I know you mentioned Declan there. I think for him, Declan's probably not changed the way he's played in the last 2 years. He's always kind of been that dynamic midfielder trying to get up and down the pitch, you know, very good at breaking up play, very comfortable on the ball. I think what has developed over this last season has certainly been his mature, like the way he plays, he's far more mature. He's playing beyond his years, in the sense that, like, he looks like someone who's been around for, you know, 6-7 seasons. He's certainly, like, maturing, and they all look to him for such a young man. He is that inspirational tool, in the middle of midfield. And that's a big thing for them.
The other thing from that game I just wanted to chat to you about as well is the performance of Martin Odegaard, David. Like, I mean, he's been so good since he's come into Arsenal. I would say that Arsenal fans would be happier if he actually lost a bit of form, so that Real Madrid won't be too interested in signing him back, because this guy could clearly make a difference to Arsenal in the long term if they manage to sign his permanent signature.
No, definitely. We've all heard the hype over the last, 3-4 years of this young man. Certainly yesterday was one of those games where I did look at him. Like, to think of 21 years of age, he went and tried to get the ball everywhere when they were 3-0 down. He was the one that was actually trying to drag them back into the game. And he is an exciting talent. Of course, Arsenal fans, will Real Madrid leave him go? I highly doubt it. I think there was probably conversations that, like, I don't know what is this third, fourth loan. He'll probably end up going loan again for the next year or two. But certainly he was the driving spark in Arsenal. And to think, like, if they can get Aubameyang, Lacazette and all those firing at the same time as this lad, then Arsenal can, you know, they are a very good outfit. But of course, if you look at the West Ham game yesterday, the goals they conceded is just so sloppy, especially, Jared Bowen's won the second one. It's just awful defending. To give away the free kick, everyone's got their back turned. But at the same time, Odegaard does look a hell of a player.
Yeah, I guess that question is, how do you change flakiness in a team? Like, I mean, you can sign quality, but that mentality, David, is just, you can almost see it haunting Arsenal at some point in this Europa League campaign as well, that performance is in them. Even against Olympiacos last Thursday, it was shaky enough despite having a 3-1 lead from an away leg. There's always just something about that mentality that isn't quite there, that is enough to get them to the next level.
No, definitely. And as everyone was quick to pick up on yesterday, that game yesterday against West Ham more or less summed up Arsenal's season. You know, to be 3-0 down, look awful, look like you can't string four or five passes together, and then a few words are said, and you end up getting 3-3. You know, that just kind of sums them up. I don't know. Arsenal have always, I'd say Arsenal, biggest thing they lack is kind of character. When I mean that, I don't mean the team. I mean kind of big characters individually. You know, lads who are, you know, captain material. Like the whole Aubameyang scenario of your captain being late, your captain being dropped. That shouldn't, like stuff like that should never happen. No, that's just, no, I don't disagree with what Arteta did, but I think stuff like that should never happen. He should never, he's the captain. He's meant to set the standards. They're missing that. If you look at the old previous Arsenal captains, your Tony Adams, your Patrick Vieira, those big mainstay, you know, spearheaded figures in the middle of a team. That, you know what I mean? They used to, if you remember, I don't know if you've heard this, but Arsenal used to always have that thing whenever they were training, whatever the captain wore, the other players had to wear. So if the captain came out with long sleeves, you had to wear long sleeves. That was kind of like, you know, that's the kind of, that sense of, you know, leadership in big players, they don't have anymore. That's the big thing. And you talk about the flakiness. If Arsenal could address that with a big, big influence on the back line, even one in midfield, I think Partey could do that. With the rest, that will then help them. If they can bring in a proper leader, you know, to almost cut the nonsense out of them, I think they could obviously pick themselves up. But at the moment, it's just, they're so hot and cold. It's every second game is a win and then it's a loss. And it's just going to be, looks like for them, it's going to be one of them seasons where they just plateau.
Well, it's been 10 years of us talking about Arsenal like that. David, I do want to move on and talk about Ireland, because obviously we've been really badly damaged by a number of injuries. And I just wanted to kind of get your take on this, because I was looking back on the team selection for the 1-1 draw in Germany when you played right back that night. And it was a completely different team selection from the previous 3 days. We were in the midst of an injury crisis. A lot of players playing out of position with new partnerships. Like, the players who are fit aren't thinking, Jesus, everybody's injured. They're thinking,
yeah, of course,
this is my chance.
Yeah. I know, it's us lot now, the pundits on the outside, or the experts, as we like to call ourselves. They're the ones going through everything. Like, of course, look, you know, Darren obviously been injured, Queevy then picked up the knock, Kevin Long is out, Callum O'Dowda, of course, Conor Horan. You're kind of, we're all looking kind of going, oh, it's almost because we're trying to, you know, we sit here and we talk about Ireland games coming up. Of course, we're excited, we're looking forward to them. We're trying to almost pick our 11s that when a name is ruled out, there is that sense of, oh my God, that's another one gone. A player won't be thinking like that, as you said there, and you go back to the Germany game. I played right back that day. You'd have had Stephen Quinn played, Johnny Walters played right side midfield. I can't even remember the whole lot of the team.
I'll give it to you. Ford was in goals, you were right back. Yeah. It was O'Shea and Wilson, centre back, yeah. Ward, left back, Quinn and Whelan in the middle of midfield. Walters, McGeady, McLean, and Robbie Keane started the game.
Oh, it's a hell of a team. Hell of a team. Yeah, but at the same time, as you said there, like, I wasn't, like, I think Shams would have been the mainstay right back at that time, picked up an injury. And I think Cyrus had just been drafted into the squad around that time. And then Martin just came to me and said, you're going to play right back. And that was kind of it. And you should get on with it. That's why, like, even I was on Saturday show with JD and the boys, and I said, I still feel Ireland are capable of going and getting a result. Now, I know a lot of people listening to this or watching this will say, like, how can you be optimistic? It's because I played in games with Ireland where our backs were against the wall and we got results. Like you said there, that was a makeshift team. Of course, look, still enough good players on that pitch to make something happen. We were playing an exceptional Germany team, but we knew we could get a result. We believed in ourselves. That's why I am hopeful, and I believe that, you know, come the Serbia game, we can get a result.
The Serbian manager, Dragan Stojkovic, has come out and said, Ireland can be uncomfortable to play against, but I can't accept that they can play better than us. I know Alan Brown has come back to have a nibble at that as well, but is that the sort of stuff you almost love to see in the Ireland camp, an opposition manager writing off Ireland on technical levels and stuff like that?
You see how you flip that on its head to technical levels. I genuinely, stuff like that wouldn't even bother me. Like, even if it was brought up at the time, wouldn't even acknowledge it. Of course, it's almost mind games that, you know, we're technically inferior to them. you know, we don't play as good football as them. Stuff like that wouldn't even bother me. I'd be so solely focused on my own, you know, preparation, my training, leading into the game. Am I starting a game? And I'd be concentrating on the other, like all the rest of my teammates. Like Stojkovic says, wouldn't interest me at all.
What is the mood? What are the conversations about the players who are missing and the players who are there? Like who do you expect to pick that up this week in the changing room and around? Like obviously a lot of the responsibility falls to the management, but the players have to stand up this week too and essentially take ownership.
Yeah, of course they do, but that's the same as any other trip, any other campaign. The players inevitably have to stand up once it comes game time. They've got to produce a performance to get a result. There's no doubting that, you know, look, you see the videos the FAI tweet out there of the new lads coming in. You know, I saw Robbie Brady, Seamus Coleman greeting them. All the older senior lads who've been around the world will obviously welcome all those lads in. They'll feel at home. Of course, you kind of forget, like, there is COVID, so we don't know which way and what it's going to be like. You know, are players rooming together? You know what I mean? Are they allowed to sit down and have snacks and, you know, chit-chat, play pool or catch up or whatever? I don't know the ins and outs of it. Or do you have to stay in your room? I mean, you know, 2 meter Peter distance. So it's an interesting one. But look, the lads have got to pick it up. I imagine they'll know the importance of the opening game of group things. So you imagine, obviously, this morning, they'll be training probably an hour and a half or whatever, that Seamus will be driving it on, kind of saying, like, come on, like, this is it. No, like, we've got a couple of days to lead into the game. And Stephen will know his time is valuable because, you know, he's got 3 games coming up. You know, the turnaround is quick. So it will be interesting to see how they get on.
Who would you start in midfield?
Oh, well, Howren's out now. I tipped Howren. Obviously Josh Cullen, if people keep telling me, I haven't seen a lot of him. I'm not going to lie. There's got to be a case for him. Jason Malumbi hasn't played a lot of Preston, which is obviously disappointing because I actually really like the lad. I think Jason Knight has to start because of, you know, he's played regular football. I'd go Jason Knight, Jeff Hendrick and Alan Brown. I'd go for Jeff. I know Jeff hasn't played a lot for Newcastle, but I go for that experience. And I do think Jeff can play the kind of deeper role. I'm sorry, Josh Cullen, if you are listening, but I've not watched enough of Anderlecht's football, so I don't know how he's getting on.
All right. I mean, at least there is some strength and depth, given that we have lost all of the players that we've lost at this point. Stephen Kenny must be really cursing his luck, but look, we face the week with enthusiasm and optimism. David, great to have you with us. Thanks a million.
Cheers, guys.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.